Okay. Okay, so let's go to the second part of my lecture. What I will try to tell you today, I mean, it's a bit of B-physics phenomenology. I mean, particularly how this interesting observer, which I introduced yesterday, this amplitude, like the box amplitude and so on, how they are measured from experiment, how we can really relate to something that we can measure. So we'll discuss briefly the time evolution, the time-dependent asymmetry of B and B sub S meson. I will briefly touch how these mesons are produced at Hadron Collider, which of course is relevant for LHCb, for physics at LHC in general. And then I will go in the discussion of rare B decays. I mean, discussing only a few examples, okay, because we have not a limited amount of time, so we'll discuss mainly two interesting examples, but I will first discuss how we can build our theoretical tool, this effective Hamiltonian, which is the theoretical tool we use to compute this decay amplitude, and allows to introduce the language that you will always hear about flavor physics in talk, so I think it's important to introduce. Okay, so let's start with the time evolution, okay? I'm sure yesterday everybody has done this calculation, right? No, after the dancing. Okay. Yeah, probably yesterday you didn't have enough time to do this, but okay, try to do it this afternoon that we have more time. Okay, the calculation of this in the gauges limit. Okay, so we have these amplitudes which mix B and B bar. So the two mass eigenstate, so-called B light and B heavy, is a mixture of B and B bar meson, so we have a general structure of this type which describes the evolution of a B anti B state. Okay, so we have a mass matrix, and the off-diagonal entries of this mass matrix, those which mix B and B bar, are those which are determined by this type of amplitude. Okay, and of course there is also a decay width part, and this Q and P mixing parameter, their relative phase is indeed the phase, the CP-relating phase given by this diagram. Okay. I thought that there are corrections due to the decay, but these are really negligible because this is just long distance. We don't have the enhancement of the tau that we had here, so can be safely neglected in the standard model. But actually, in any realistic model, because it's pure long distance effect. So, measuring, trying to determine experimentally this parameter Q over P, we get the phase of this amplitude. That is the interesting thing we want to determine. Now, we have seen yesterday, okay, that in the case of B sub D, okay, there is a large CP-relating phase because we have this VTD, which is the element which carry the large CP-relating phase of the CK matrix. Now, you remember this was this combination rho and eta. Well, now I should be more careful because this Kabibo-Kobayashi-Maskawa matrix is phase convention dependent, okay? It can move the phases from one place to the other. So we always work in that convention which I introduced yesterday, where the phase is in VTD, okay? Actually, as you will see, Q over P is not an observable quantity. It's only the relative phase between this Q over P and some decay amplitude that is what we measure. And, okay, in this convention, which is convenient one, this Q over P brings a large phase, and this phase is just this beta, the beta of the unitary triangle which I introduced yesterday, which is the phase of the Kabibo-Kobayashi-Maskawa, if you want, is the phase of VTD. So it's large in the case of B, sub D, sorry. In the case of B sub S, so if I put an S port here, I have VTS, and VTS, on the other hand, do not have a large CP-relating phase. It's, so this ratio is 1, okay, up to correction, which goes like Kabibo angle squared. This lambda was this small parameter on which we expand the matrix. No, you remember, so this is 0.22 squared, which is a very small correction. So just for introduce the standard notation, this is called beta S, although this beta S has nothing to do with the beta, okay? It's just to have analogy with the beta that is indeed the phase of the unitary triangle, which is the one appearing in B sub D, okay? So in B sub S, however, the strength of this amplitude is much bigger because VTS is bigger, and this implies that it's a much bigger mass difference, okay? Indeed, the mass difference in the case of B sub S meson is correspond to a very fast, I mean, it's usually measured in inverse picosecond, it's 18 compared to the mass difference in the delta VD system, which is much smaller. because there is this lambda to the minus 2 difference, okay, which gives the difference between VTS and VTD. So since this delta M will control then the time oscillation of the mesons, clearly the beta best, the oscillation are much faster. Okay, this is why it's much more difficult to determine the phase of this amplitude. So how we measure the phase? Okay, well, the principle is very similar, very very simple in principle. So we have if we can start from a B0 meson, so if we are sure that we produce at some time t equals 0 a B0 meson, this B0 meson can oscillate and become an anti-B meson and eventually decay into final state F, or can directly decay into final state F. So we should choose a final state F, which is a CP eigenstate, which can be accessed both by B or by B bar. It will be accessed by two different amplitudes, which are two CP related amplitudes, okay, A and A bar. So either if the process occurs in this way or if occurring this way is allowed, and so clearly by looking at the time that these things here has a time dependence, okay, related to the oscillation. So measuring the oscillation parameter, measuring this time dependent oscillation, we get the interference between this type of chain or this other chain. So what we measure is really this parameter, lambda, which is indeed the product of Q over P and the ratio of the two decay amplitudes. Okay. So now this is a phase convention independent quantity. Okay. So we usually work in the standard phase convention where, okay, we will see these decay amplitudes are real, hopefully, or a well-defined phase, and so all the phase that we extract is the phase of the mixing. See, indeed, the key point to have a clean determination of these phases is to determine process, to identify theoretically process where we are able to compute this AF, or better, if we are able to compute the weak phase of this amplitude, because this is the only thing that, which is relevant. You see, since I have the ratio, I mean, if I know the weak phase, okay, I can compute the modulus here. It's fixed at this one, and the only thing I need to know is the weak phase, and then is the difference between the weak phase of this amplitude AF and the weak phase of this Q over P, which is the phase of the box. That this is what I measure experimentally. Okay, so the time dependent distribution has an expression which is very simple. Okay, is okay the standard exponential factor. There is this sinus term, okay, which depend on the mass difference that we can determine experimentally because we look at the time-dependent distribution, okay, and the coefficient in front is just imaginary part of this phase difference between the box and the decay amplitude, okay. And this eta f is just the eigenvalue of CP, so it can be plus one or minus one as according if it is a CP odd or CP even final state. Okay, so it's conceptually very simple. Actually, that is something that we know very well since 40 years, because at first we studied in chem physics, right, this type of things. So here the key issue, as I said, theoretically is try to determine places where we know how to compute the weak phase of this A. Okay, so we have seen how to compute the weak phase of the box. It's easy because in the box everything is dominated by the top core, so it's pure short distance physics, while here in the decay amplitude the thing is a bit more complicated. So the key issue to understand if you can use this method to determine a clean information on the flavor mixing is on the theoretical side to identify state where this decay amplitude is dominated by a single weak phase. So then here in the ratio I have twice this weak phase. And on the experimental side, the two key issues are first to be sure of the initial tag of the flavor tag of my initial state, so to be sure that I have a V0 or a V0 bar. If I have a mixture, of course, I cannot do anything. And also, I need to measure the time dependent resolution, okay, to identify this coefficient. These are the two crucial issues. So let's first look at the theoretical aspects, I mean, cases when this weak phase of the decay amplitude is determined. Well, there is one famous channel, which is B going to Chebyshev short, which corresponds to a transition between, okay, we have a B, these are the quark inside the B meson, B and so if you want a B and the D bar, and the B quark decay into a CC bar S state, okay, so the flavor transition is B going to CC bar SD, and this is the flavor content of Chebyshev. Chebyshev is a CC bar state, and K short, okay, is made of S and D. So Since I'm interested in determining only the weak phase, I don't need to make the full calculation of this decay amplitude, which would be very difficult because it's an hadronic process. So that if I computing exclusive hadronic process, something that we cannot do in perturbative QCD, it's very complicated, would be a nightmare if I had to compute exactly the decay amplitude. But as I said before, I only need the weak phase, okay, because what I can measure is the ratio of the amplitude and its complex conjugate. Okay, so I only need the phase. So the phase comes only from the perturbative diagram, the weak phase. So I need to just look at the topology of the flavor topology of the decay amplitude. So this process is nice because the leading topology is just a three-level amplitude of this type, so B going to HR and then the S char, SC coupling. Okay, so this is the leading contribution. This amplitude, if I just count the power of the Khabibov angle which appear in this vertex, so here I have BC, so I have a BCB, which is lambda square, and I have VCS, which is over the 1. So this is a 2 quarts of the second generation. So here, this amplitude is over the lambda square in terms of Khabibov power. Okay, this is not the only possible amplitude. Of course, there are also correction coming from loop diagram like this, where, for instance, I can have a gluon exchange, okay? And here I have B going to a W, okay? Here I have charm and top, for instance, and then a strange. Well, this amplitude, okay, now here I will have B, V, C, B, and, okay, and V, C, S, or V, T, B, and V, T, S, okay? Exactly like in the case of the box we did yesterday. However, the two, and finally, I have the contribution with the up. Okay, so as always, when I have this type of loop, I have up, charm, and top. But I single out the up because the up is the only one which appears with a different phase, because here I have VUV, which has a complex phase. But luckily, this is small because VUV, we know that it's a lambda cube. Okay, so here I have lambda cube, here I have another lambda. So this is lambda to the fourth, and it's a one loop suppression, is a one loop contribution. So I put here an alpha, at least an alpha factor. So the first two terms, the three level and the leading penguin, okay, with charm and top, have the same phase. They are real in the standard CKM phase convention, and they give the dominant contribution, and the only correction comes from diagram like this. And even if you don't compute it exactly, okay, what matters is the relative strength of this with respect to these other two, and I can do it just naively looking at this, counting the Khabibov angle. I see that this is loop and this CKM suppressed, so it's a very small pollution. Okay. So, as always, I mean, we have this trick, okay, that whenever we have this intermediate up type, we use this relation. So you see, this is the relation that tells you that, okay, VTB and VTS, which is over the lambda square, is equal to this, which is over the lambda square, and the correction is lambda to the fourth. So I can always put the nasty things in the up sector, which is small. Okay. So this is why, in this case, when I measure the time-dependent distribution of B meson going to J-psi short, I have an information on this lambda f. I recall this lambda f is the ratio, I mean, if you want, is the relative phase between the box and the decay. So the decay, we have seen, it's real, so the only thing which I get is the phase from the mixing, which was this sine 2 beta, okay, coming from the box. Is it clear? Again, don't be shy, eh? Ask question if... So measuring this time-dependent distribution really give a very precise constraint on this rho eta plano, if you want, a very precise constraint on B. And this was indeed the golden channel for B-factory. Essentially, B-factory, when they've been proposed, the main motivation was measure this time-dependent distribution to determine beta. And they've done a wonderful job. You see here the final result by Babar, which was presented at Lepton Photo, I think, this year. I've stolen this slide by André. Oh, I think I misspelled the name. Anyway, so you see here the what has been measured by Babar, okay, B and B bar, you see really clearly different decay distribution if we start with the B or we start with the B bar, okay, and they've done it both for CP odd finite state and CP odd and CP even finite state. So looking for instance, gpsi k short or gpsi k long, which different only by this eta. So using exactly the opposite shift between B and B bar, you see really fitting the sinusoidal distribution, you get exactly the a sinus, and the coefficient of this sinus, the one that determines the height here, is exactly this sinus 2 beta. So this is why they determine this sinus 2 beta, and so this is again the raw eta plane, the one I introduced yesterday, so this parameter of the Krabibu convergence scala. And since you measure sine 2 beta from this distribution, there is a twofold ambiguity to determine beta, so we have two solutions, one is this one, the other is that one. That one is excluded by other observables which measure the cosine of beta, so they don't measure it precisely, but they simply are used to exclude this other solution. So you have with this very precise constant, this beta, which is measured now with the accuracy of better than 1 degree. So it's a remarkable, precise constant on an amplitude, which is a pure loop amplitude dominated by the top, okay? And this is done purely at low energy, looking at this time-dependent distribution. Okay, so this is what is really one of the most interesting results obtained by B-factories. What can be done for B sub S mixing, okay? What we still need to understand in flavor physics is the B sub S mixing. We have measured the chaos sector, we have measured the B sub D sector, okay? What is still missing, the only last piece of information, is the B sub S mixing amplitude that we would like to understand to see if there is or not room for the physics. Here, there is a channel which is very similar conceptually, as you probably know. Is the B sub S going to gpsi phi, okay? Which is exactly the same type of transition. However, here, since I start with the initial state which has an S quark, I put the same S quark also in the finite state. So I need to find a finite state in addition to the CC bar, which is the gpsi, I need to find the finite state which is a clear SS bar finite state, and this is the phi, okay? So if I identify experimentally this gpsi phi finite state, I determine a finite state whose flavor structure is just CC bar SS bar, sorry, here there is a bar missing. And so clearly the type of amplitude which go into the game are exactly the same, okay, because this S is just a spectator here in this game. You see, clearly the hadronic amplitude will be different, but we don't care. I mean, the only thing we care is the weak phase, and the weak phase proceeds exactly in the same way. So we have the tiny up quark pollution, which is very small. However, now, when we measure this decay distribution, now what we get is beta S, because this is the phase of the B sub S mixing, okay? Which, as we said, this should be zero in the standard model, plus tiny correction. So it's not a constant in the raw eta plane, but it's a very significant constant on new physics, because if new physics brings a new phase in the box of B sub S for some reason, then measuring this decay channel, we can single out, okay? Here, the only difference, which actually is a non-trivial difference, with respect to the case of the B sub D, is that this final state, these are two vectors, okay? So, gpsi, phi. So, you have an initial state, which is a scalar, and then you have a final state with two vectors. So, I can combine the two vectors in different angular momentum to get a scalar. So, here I have, so the gpsi, phi is not a CP eigen state. It's a mixture of CP plus and CP. I need to do an angular analysis to determine the different CP ability components. This was not the problem in the case of gpsi k, because gpsi k have a spin 1, gpsi k, which is a spin 0, so the gpsi and the k measure must be in angular momentum 1 to make a total angular momentum 0. So that there the angular momentum of the final state was fixed in gpsi k. In the gpsi phi, since I have two vectors, no, I have the different helicity amplitude. So this is not a CP eigen state. I have different angular momentum state. So I need to make a full angular momentum analysis. And because I have these two vectors, I need to measure the polarization of the two vectors to determine and distinguish the different CP eigen state. And so finally to determine this beta. This is not a theoretical problem, okay? It's just that it's a much more complicated experimental procedure because you need to disentangle from data the two different angular momentum state. Before discussing how this is already starting to be done, as you probably know by CDF has started to do this type of measurement. Before discussing the measurement, let me discuss first other type of decay, which we measured at the B factories, which are the so-called B2S penguin modes, modes where we don't have the three-level amplitude. These are amplitudes where the flavor structure is the transition of the type B going to 3S, okay? Clearly, B going to 3S cannot be mediated by any three-level process because it's we have only down-type core, so we don't have a charge exchange. So the only two type of diagrams are penguin type topology, okay? So here, again, there is a dominant penguin amplitude, which is over the lambda square, but now the pollution is potentially large because the only thing which distinguishes these two is the CKM suppression, which is lambda square, okay? Previously, I had this term, which was much larger with respect to this one because it was a three-level compared to a loop. Here I have only two loops, okay? So the pollution here, it's larger, and actually it's more difficult to control it precisely, okay? Here there are theoreticians who have spent years and years trying to control and to compute exactly then the decay amplitude to be sure that this pollution is, instead of 10%, is 5%, but it's a very difficult game because then you should really compute the hadronic amplitude, okay? So it's more difficult to make this control. Anyway, clearly this is suppressed with respect to the leading amplitude because we have different power of the Khabibwa angle. So if one see a big deviation, okay, so here you would if this term would be negligible, you would expect exactly the same thing that you have in Jepsi K, okay, because we have the phase of the decay amplitude which is real and you interfere with the box, so exactly the same thing. So if you see a big deviation here, okay, something above 10%, to be really conservative, you can claim that there is new feasible because the only way to get that is that maybe to add some extra loop amplitude with an extra CP blading phase, which eventually could be done, could be induced by new feasible. Okay. Let me stress that unfortunately there are not many pure penguin channels of this type. Okay, so this is a particularly nice channel because there are really, okay, if you have a phi, okay, sure, so phi is a SS bar state, and yeah, so there are clearly three S in the final state if I look up Jepsi K. And so here, for sure, there is no three-level amplitude. In most of the other channels which have been studied, there are contamination coming from up-type quark in the three-level amplitude, so the pollution could be even larger. So, I mean, this channel, I mean, for several years in the recent past, in the last 4 or 5 years, have been emphasized a lot as good things to determine, to eventually find new physics. Well, I want to stress that this is true, first of all, only in those channels which are pure penguin, which this one I think is the only really good one, and only if you see really a big deviation from the standard model, okay? Because otherwise, if you have to fight against the 10% pollution, you really need to enter in the hadronic calculation that we don't control very well. Yes, this is a very good question, and because here I have also the gluon contribution, okay, and we will I will explain this in the subsequent part of the lecture. In this case, in the case of the Z penguin, it works exactly like for the box. So the top is completely dominant, and we can forget about the rest. However, in the case of the gluon penguin, we have a different type of G mechanism. It's only a logarithmic type G mechanism, and you will see. So that there is it's not really pure short distance physics. You will see that there is a sensitivity to the infrared physics, which is enhanced. And so in that case, okay, if you do, for instance, the calculation in the gauges limit, you see that you have a logarithmic dependence on the infrared scale that we didn't have in the case of the box time. So it's really a different type of amplitude whenever there is a gluon attached, and the gluon can be attached here in the case of SS bar state. This is we will come back to this later on when we discuss the case. The cases where the top quark dominate are really only the cases where we have this hard G mechanism, where everything is really dominated by the Yukawa interaction, which are only very few cases. The box one is one example, the Z penguin is another example, the Higgs penguin is another example, but all the gluon penguins, no. The gluon penguins, unfortunately, it's much more complicated. Okay, so, other questions? Yes?
I don't think I
No, because in the other case, the dominant thing was this one. Okay. So here, if I compare this one with respect to this one, okay, I have lambda to the fourth, and in addition the loose operation. The loose operation is at least 1/16 pi squared, so it's a small suppression. While here, on the other hand, I don't have this dominant one, so I have two equivalent loop amplitudes. More questions? Yes. This again, we will come back to the exact calculation later on. Here, I'm really not computing the diagram, okay? I'm just interested to understand the weak phase, okay? So why I don't really compute this diagram here, because I think it's very difficult to compute this diagram, because there are then QCD correction which can go all over the place, especially in the case when we have the gluon. So computing this diagram, it's quite complicated. However, the QCD correction do not spoil the weak phase, okay? So QCD correction will be similar in this case and in this other case. So the only thing which is relevant for the extraction of the phase, the weak phase of the amplitude, is just this comparison, okay, that here there is VUB and here there is no VUB. It, I agree, it's a kind of qualitative argument.
But what is the energy scale of the alpha S?
Good question. Here clearly it will be the B scale, okay, because we have, here you will have to use the normalization group equation and resum alpha S from the W scale, because here there is a top, or from the top mass down to the B scale. So to compute this diagram precisely, you need to use the normalization group equation and resum. There are potentially large logarithmic correction here, okay. Well, even here, because actually we start from the W scale. So you have to use the normalization group to compute precisely and resum all the alpha S log effect. And finally, you will express everything in terms of alpha S at MB. Well, the two basic energy scales are the mass of the W, or the mass of the top, which are basically the same. Okay, so there is the electroweak scale. And finally, the final scale of the process, which is the B mass. Okay. So you expect large log of MW over MB. Okay. So this is why you need to resum this log to do the complete calculation. But I will come back to this. Okay. But the important point right now is that these details, which indeed are interesting theoretical details, are not relevant to determine really the relative weak phase. Okay. So, how is the situation, the present situation of this? So, there are several penguin-type modes, although some of them are not really penguin. Okay, there are also pollution from other amplitudes, which also are even more dirty. And you see, in all these channels, people have measured what they call sine to beta effective, okay, because you would expect sine to beta if you could neglect the uptype contribution. And this very thin thing here is what you measure from B to CCS channel, which are the Gödel channel, the one where you are sure that you're measuring sine to beta, and this is what you measure in the other channel. So you see, basically the two agree. Okay, maybe one can argue that there is some discrepancy. I don't think it's really worth to argue, but The point is that even if there is a discrepancy, this discrepancy is too small compared to the level when which we are able to compute exactly this diagram. So I think this category was interesting in the last few years, because at the beginning, okay, people were hoping to see a big discrepancy. We have not seen such a big discrepancy. And so in particular, the best observable like this phi k really is consistent with the measurement from the Chapman sector. And we are close now to the level of the irreducible theoretical error. So I want to stress that now, even if, let's suppose at LACB, you will measure much more precisely this observable, then I think there is not much room to learn much, because we are entering in a region where we need to control this non-perturbable effect that it's a difficult game. So here I put, for those who of you, probably none of you remember the saga of epsilon prime or epsilon. I mean, in the Kern system also we had something similar. I mean, people were thinking that they were able to compute this diagram in perturbation theory and in the case of the chaos, and then they realized that actually non-perturbable correction are important, and they can give correction which spoil the what you would get only from a perturbative calculation. So this is why I think one should be worried when we don't control precisely the theoretical calculation. Okay, so are there more questions?
I'm going to say that 0.3 is greater than 0.1. And therefore, if we stayed at the present central value of price for short, we wouldn't actually find the ability to slow for error. According to what you said.
If you see the difference of 0.3, you mean?
Yes, which is where we are.
Well, because you make an average of different channels, and some of which I think I've even...
No, just to make it short. Not the average of many channels.
The difference is 0.3?
Yeah, look at your picture.
Okay. But the error is also 0.3.
Yeah, but we can reduce the error. That's
okay, okay.
The
yeah, okay. If the central value remains 0.3 and you reduce the error of 0.005, then, okay.
Yeah.
I buy. Okay. I bet that the discrepancy will become smaller. But. Okay. How we study the time dependence at Hadron machine? Well, at B-factories was an easy game in a sense. Well, okay, well, it was not easy, but it was a very clean setup. So because you produce a bivac pair from the Upsilon for SDK, so there was a very clean environment. The B cross section over the production of background was only 0.3, and it was a coherent quantum state. So it was clear that you produce a BB bar in a well-defined angular momentum state, which simplify a lot the time-dependent analysis. And since you produce only B and B bar, okay, you could use one of the mode for tagging. So you produce B and B bar, one B decays, for instance, into a final state where you identify the lepton. So from the sign of the lepton, you determine if it is a B0 or a B0 bar. And then that is what you set your time equals 0. Then you study... you know that at this time you have a BB bar superposition, and then you study the other decay into a CP final state, and so measuring this displaced vertex, you determine precisely the oscillation. So this was very nice at B factories. The only problem of B factories is that, first of all, there were no B sub S. Well, maybe now Bell is running at the 5S, seeing the B sub S, but they see very... Not very many, B sub S, because the cross-section is small. And, okay, I say here, low statistics. I mean, this is certainly not a low statistic. I mean, still there were 10 to the 8 B pairs for 100 Fertile, but this is low compared to the statistics that one can have at Hadron Collider. Hadron Collider, you produce B really a lot of them. However, still, it's a very dirty environment because the production of B with respect to the background is much smaller, so it's much more difficult to identify the B, to be sure that they are B, is an incoherent quantum state. The good thing is that there is high statistic. Here, if you do 10 to the 12 B pairs per fetobar. So it's really an environment suited. And first of all, you produce whole hadron with B port together, so you produce B sub D and B sub S. So the best things you can do at Hadron machine are rare process involving B sub S, but really there is no competition from the B factor. And also some rare process with the B sub D, where, I mean, here you were limited by statistics. So the key issue, one of the key issues at Hadron machine is the flavor tag, okay? Yeah, as you probably know, I'm not an experimentalist, but I try to give you some flavor of how one determines the tag of a B in a Hadron environment. I've stolen this slide from a talk from some years ago. You see, it's what happens is that you always produce B and B bar, okay, from this type of process. You don't know in which angular momentum state they're produced, but they are in pairs. So what you can do is that, okay, you have several strategies. Okay, you can search for the lepton from one of the decays, but you can also try to measure the full charge of the jet associated to this B meson. And something which has proven to be particularly effective is the fact that this must be the case into D meson, because the leading decay element of the B quark is BCB, okay, because it's the lambda square, while B going to U is lambda Q. So basically, B meson decay into D meson, and the D meson decay into K meson. So if you look at kaons, okay, on the other side, I mean, the tag inside, you reduce a lot your background, and of course combining the things, for instance, kaon plus the lepton plus the jet, of course you have a emitter tagging. Another interesting thing, you can use the same site tagging, because for instance, if you when you produce a B sub D usually is produced together. You produce the B quark, and this B quark has to hadronize, okay? So to hadronize, if you have a B sub S, the hadronization goes together with the kaon, while in the case of B sub B, because you have to pick up an SS bar pair to create a B sub S, and that actually is a very efficient tag. If you want to form a B sub D, you have to take from the vacuum a DD bar pair, so this DD pair should probably form a pi. So yes, so this is the same side tagging. And so you have several tools which can be combined. And here again, I don't want to enter into detail. I'm sure there are people who are more expert than me on this in the audience. The kaon tagging seems probably the most powerful tool because of this decay chain, B going to D going to kaons, and one can reach efficiency, I mean tagging efficiency, even up to 6%. I hope this number is still valid for B sub S, because for B sub S you have a kaon on the opposite side from the B decay chain and the kaon on the same side, because when you hadronize and you form a B sub S, you typically form it together with the kaon. So it's not impossible. Okay. Now let's come to the golden measurement, the golden measurement of a hadronic machine for the time-dependent studies. The golden measurement is this CP violating phase of B sub S mixing, okay? So the analog of sine 2 beta for the B factor is sine 2 beta S, so the phase of B sub S mixing from the time evolution of this B sub S. So this, I want to stress, I hope I give you some argument yesterday. Determining the phase of this box amplitude that we compute precisely, that we can control very precisely in the theoretical side, is really an important information, okay, to determine the structural physics of flavor physics beyond the standard model. And this phase, the phase of B sub S mixing, is the last missing ingredients about all this box amplitude that we can compute. So we compute it for the kaon, for the B sub D, and the B sub S. In the case of kaons, we have measured everything precisely. Actually, the mass difference cannot be computed very precisely, but the CP violating observable can be computed precisely and has been measured, agrees with the standard model. In the case of B sub B, both the mass difference and the phase has been measured and agree with the standard model. In the case of B sub S, the mass difference has been measured and agree with the standard model. The only missing ingredient is the phase of this B sub S. And so it's really a key element. And it's quite challenging experimentally, because as I said before, one needs a non-trivial angular analysis to separate the various decay amplitude, because we have this decay into a vector-vector final state. So here, I just try to give you a picture, because it's a bit cumbersome formula for the decay amplitude, which I didn't bother to write, because we have six independent decay amplitude because of how we combine the different polarization of the vector state. So you basically, what you see experimentally is a four-body decay, not a two-body decay, because you have your B sub S, okay, which decay into, suppose you can go to the B sub S stress frame, you have a J psi, and you have your phi, and then your phi decay into KK, and your J psi decay into U plus minus. So basically you have two different planes, the decay plane of the J psi, the decay plane of the KK, which are somehow represented here in this picture. You have to measure the various relative angles to determine the relative angular momentum state, if they are in angular momentum 1 or angular momentum 0, and which give a different CP combination. The other things which complicate that there are fast oscillations, because these B sub S oscillate very fast because they have very small fast difference. And also, in the case of the B sub S, there is a non-negligible decay width difference between the two B sub S measures. So you also have to do a simultaneous fit of the width difference, okay, together with the mixing phase and the various decay parameter. So this is basically a cartoon of what one does. Okay, so one uses one B, identifying the jet charge, the kaon, and the lepton to determine the flavor. Okay, then use the fact that there is a kaon here to the same sign tag to determine the fact that we have a B sub S, and then so from this decay one determine the time t equals 0, so that one study this displaced vertex, and here he has this four-body final state. And so what one has to do is, identify your final state, measure precisely the lifetime the decay distribution, measure all this angular distribution, I mean, so to determine, to then make the angular analysis, do the analysis of the flavor tag, which of course is always done statistically, so you have some probability that it's indeed a B or a B bar, you're never sure, so you have to take this together with the, your, to put it in a likelihood fit, and then you do find a likelihood fit where you try to determine all the parameters, including this CPU rating phase. Okay, and this seems really, I mean, actually to me, seems very complicated thing to be done, but what is encouraging is that now CDF has done this, actually even with an environment which was not really thought to be suited to do it, and they started to, CDF and sorry, both CDF and DZ, so the Tevatron, the two Tevatron experiments, has started to do this quite successfully. So this is, these are the latest results announced this summer by the two collaboration, combining the result of the two collaborations. So as I said, this is a simultaneous fit of the width difference, delta gamma S, and the phase. So the clean information is the phase, okay? But we cannot disentangle it from this complicated fit from the width difference. This is what you expect in the standard model, okay? You see, there is an uncertainty, not on the phase, there is an uncertainty in the calculation of the width difference, which is, again, is an hadronic quantity. And these are the likelihood contour in this plane obtained by the two experiments. And you see that, actually, the standard model seems to be almost off by 2 sigma. Of course, it's still only 2 sigma, so probably, clearly, we have to wait. It's a very complicated analysis. Let me stress that at this point, I mean, this rather complicated analysis, it's, I mean, at least in my opinion, it's not very convincing. I mean, if you compare it to what has been done by the B factor, in the B factor, you have seen this beautiful different dependence of B and B bar. So you see by highs the displacement of B and B bar. Hopefully, I mean, with a lot of statistics, you can do that also for the B sub S. And really, only seeing clearly identifying the sign beta S term, you can be convinced that you have seen CPU violation, and this CPU violation eventually will be different from the summer. So I think here there is really a lot of room for improvement. Also because you see the fact that there is this correlation between delta gamma and beta S is a bit worrying, because you have a lot of terms which depend on cosine of beta S, which so it's not really a CPU violating quantity. So if you make a small error in the determination of delta gamma, this propagates into an error in the determination of beta S. Indeed, this band here that you see, it's a completely model-independent constraint, because this delta gamma, we can compute it, okay? It's the hadronic width difference. We can compute it with some error, but this is completely unaffected by new physics, okay? It's pure three-level decays. And so we expect the result to be within this curve, okay? Even beyond the standard model. So beyond the standard model, maybe the phase B sub S could be different. We could be here. And so you see that actually the preferred value is outside this curve, so which tells us that, okay, probably the time-dependent fit is not perfect, as it also was for the B factor at the beginning. I mean, it took them quite some time before really be clear, be being sure that they were seeing CPU violation in this update. Okay, are there questions here? But certainly, this is definitely something for which we expect a nice result from LACB. Let's now change a little bit subject. Let's look at the CPU violation in charged BD case. Well, in principle, charged BD case, to see CPU violation is relatively straightforward. If you look at decay of B plus into F or B minus into the same finite state, okay, F, and you see a difference, you have seen CPU violation. Very nice. However, this is, in a sense, easy experimentally, but it's difficult theoretically to compute this precisely, because, as always, you have a weak phase, and to have a different result for B plus and B minus, you need an interference between two amplitudes, like in the case of the time oscillation. But in the case of the time oscillation, we were really constructing this time-dependent distribution was sensitive only to the phase, okay, only to the weak phase. Here, on the other hand, we really measure a decay width, and decay width, we don't measure only the phase of this amplitude gamma, but we need to control also the relative size of the two hadronic amplitudes. In particular, there is a strong phase that there is no way to compute from perturbation theory. So what wave one see an asymmetry here, one clearly see that there is a different weak phase, but now we know that there is a weak phase difference in the standard model. But you basically learn about hadronic physics, you don't learn about weak physics, if you don't have a tool to determine independently the strong physics, which is actually almost impossible, except in one case which is particularly interesting, which is the case of this type of the case, B plus or minus going to a D meson, and then going to plus a kaon. And this D meson decay into a CP eigenstate, because what happens is that in this case, what you determine is the interior fitness of these two type of diagrams. So you have the basically three-level decay of B going to up char S, okay, the up char forming a D, interfering with the decay where you have B going to char up S, and this forming a D bar. Okay, but now both D and D bar can decay into a same CP eigenstate. Okay, so this is why we finally can have an interference between these two diagrams. And you see here there is no penguin at all, because it's a final state which contains four type of different quarks, B, U, C, S. Okay, so whenever you have four type of different quarks, there is never penguin. So I think it's much more clean from the theoretical point of view. And not only that, you can measure now the relative, what is important, as I said before, is to measure the relative phase of the two strong decay amplitudes. That you can do it because you can choose different CP eigenstate, I mean, CP odd and CP even finite state. And in this case, you change the sign of this interference term. Okay, you change the sign. If you look at B plus and B minus, you change the phase. Okay, and so you have four independent observables which allow you to determine completely, in a model independent way, all the relevant parameters. So you can finally extract gamma, which is the phase of UB. So this is why yesterday at the beginning I was saying that there is a way to determine gamma, which is the phase of the combination mass chromatography, from essentially three-level process. This is essentially three-level process, okay? The only theoretical assumption which goes here is that I control exactly, okay, what happens in the DD case. I need to control the weak phase of the DD case, but this we know it because we did bar mixing as measure. We know that the CP violation in the DD bar mixing is very small, so can be negligible for all practical purposes. So this is a very clean way to determine this phase gamma from without having polluted by new physics, because it's really a three-level decay. There are two different strategies. One which has been shown to be, I mean, you can do it ever looking at two-body decays, okay, where this is a two-body finite state, or looking at even Daly spot distribution or three-body decays of the D, okay, and here you should do a full Daly spot analysis to distinguish CP odd and CP even component. And this has the advantage that here the statistics is higher. The only problem of this type of measurement, which is perfectly nice theoretically, is that the interference here is very small, because at least one of the two is always highly suppressed. So this has been done at B factor. So you see, essentially looking at the asymmetry between these two Daly plots, you have an indication of a CP asymmetry. Of course, with at ICE you don't see too much, but if you do the fit, you determine, you extract gamma in a really, I want to say, it's a model independent way, because the parameterization of the Daly plot is known from the physics alone, okay? So you don't need any theoretical input. It's just a fit. It's a complicated fit, but again, it's something that can be done, and you see that the gamma has been determined with this method. The method with the two body give a much poorer information, and simply because there is not enough statistics. So this is certainly, again, a cases where I think hadronic machine, I mean, looking at charged BD case, it's relatively easy at hadronic machine. Of course, with easy is always a big word, but okay, it's something that can be done. I think here there is a lot of room for improvement. This is, again, something fundamental, because if you remember my grand picture of yesterday, so the two fundamental things which should be done is first to determine from three level all the ingredients, I mean, all the Yukawa coupling, in particular the phase of the Yukawa coupling, and then measure the clean loop induced process which we can control precisely. Okay? Question? Probably you are tired from yesterday. Okay, now let's change more drastically subject, and let's come to something which was related to the question raised above about. I will now discuss the tool to compute precisely this decay amplitude. So, and I will do it in the case which I consider more interesting, which are the rare B decays, okay, rare, the case of this type, B going to S plus lepton pair or a photon or a neutrino pair. Okay, these are conceptually very similar to the box. Okay, because here we will see actually there are cases where there is a hard G mechanism, so everything is completely dominated by top physics, and if there is something, some new sources, new Yukawa coupling beyond the standard model, you will expect some deviation. So there is not really a standard model contribution, strong suppression because in the standard model because of CKMI hierarchy, so again, high sensitivity to new physics. And here, as we will see, one can do high precision calculation within the standard model using the normalization group, I mean, really separating all the scale of the problem. And we can do that in the case of VDKs, as you will see in a minute. Let me stress now, coming back to the picture of why these decays are interesting. You see, in principle, I mean, if you remember what I wrote yesterday, we want to determine all this coupling of this extra operator, at least to put bound on this coupling, right, to determine the structure in physics. And what I showed you yesterday was only the information that we get from delta F equal 2. Okay, we have delta F equal 2, which appear in B2S transition, so B sub S mixing, B sub D mixing, and S2 D mixing. And in the standard model, this is of order lambda square, lambda cube, or lambda to the fifth. And so we were getting only some of these operators here. In principle, if we look at rare decays, there are many more processes, okay, which can be studied. Because there are many more operators, which are, for instance, the gluon penguin, the photon penguin, Z penguin, Higgs penguin, which contribute to rare decay. So if you want, the meson mixing is very nice, but it's only a selected type of amplitude. Maybe there is some reason why new physics really do not contribute to the box amplitude. I mean, indeed, you can construct a realistic model where the contribution to the box amplitude is much more suppressed to the contribution to the penguin. So it's important to determine not only the box, but also these penguins. And these penguins are very different. So there are some scenario where you affect only the Z penguin, other scenario where you affect only the Higgs penguin, and so on. So it's important to measure all of these decays. And there are several observables which can be, in principle, sensitive to this amplitude. However, only a few of them have small theoretical error. In particular, these are mainly in B decays. I mean, there are only a few rare K decays which are interesting. And this table illustrates you the, I mean, that there's still a lot of things to learn. In particular, for instance, the Higgs penguin, which is can be accessed via BSB mu or BD mu mu, is very suppressed. I mean, here I order the things in a suppression, okay, of contribution. The gluon penguin is much larger than the Higgs penguin. So clearly, there is still a variety of rare decays which has not been measured, which could hopefully reveal something about new physics. Okay, so this was for the motivation. Let's now come back to the hard problem, which is to compute precisely these things in the standard model. So the key point is the relation between partonic and hadronic amplitude. Okay, so we can compute everything in perturbation theory, but then we need to understand if what we compute in perturbation theory allows to compute a physical decay amplitude. Now, and here there are two basic categories in B decays. There are the inclusive decays, like B going to XS, which means anything containing a strange quark. In this case, one can show, I will not show it, but I only quote it, that in the limit where the B mass is large, in particular, when we can neglect the QCD scale over the B mass, the partonic rate is equivalent to the full inclusive rate. So in the case of full inclusive decay, the situation is, in a sense, relatively easy from the theoretical point of view. In the case of the exclusive decay, generally it's more difficult. It's more difficult, but there are some notable exception, in particular the case where we have a lepton pair in the final state, nu plus mu minus, neutrino, antineutrino, nu plus e minus, so for instance B to K, and we have at most one hadron in the final state, okay, K or K star, are relatively clear. So how we do the calculation? Okay, here now I come to the theoretical tool. The theoretical tool is again this tool of effective field theories, okay? Yesterday I was discussing effective field theories for discussing physics beyond the standard model, but we can apply the same tool to discuss the separation of scale in the standard model. So what we do is to construct an effective Hamiltonian separating the various scales of the problem. So we start integrating out all the heavy degrees of freedom which are around or above the Lettrobe scale, including the heavy standard model field, so including the W and the top. So we compute this amplitude, for instance, the penguin, the Z penguin, assume that the momentum here is of order of the W mass, okay? And so you determine here the coefficient of a local operator, okay, which is defined at the electron scale. So you compute this coefficient of this operator. So this operator is one of these list of dimension six operators. So similar to the case of the box. I mean, I will get something which is B bar S, lepton anti-lepton. So, for instance, an operator of this type. Sorry, here I didn't bother to put all the bar because it's very time consuming with the PowerPoint. And so, computing this diagram at the electron scale, you determine the coefficient of this operator at that scale. Okay, at that scale, you know that QCD correction are small. Okay, because the alpha s at the W scale is small. If you want, you can even compute the QCD correction. It will be a tiny alpha s and W correction. Okay. So you can compute this with some coefficient. And of course, once you integrate out, you should also integrate out the W in process which are three-level mediated, like this one. So, okay, so you don't only build this type of nice flavor changing operator, which you think are more sensitive to new physics, but you also build a tower of four-quark, standard four-quark operator. So these are what I call flavor changing neutral current operator, because they have two quark and let's say two leptons, so this should be a lepton pair. In the case of the gluon penguin, you also generate some QQ structure like this, but you also generate four-quark operator from the integrating out the W from this three-level diagram. This is, if you want, is a generalization of the Fermi theory, okay? So these are dimension six operator, and all the interesting information, the sensitivity to new physics and to the metric, so is included in the value of this coefficient evaluated at the W scale. So this is what we call the initial coefficient of the Wilson coefficient of this operator. And the interesting one are this one here, in particular those with the leptons. Then what we do? Well, then we run down, okay, now we evolve our effective Hamiltonian, integrating out now the gluon degrees of freedom, so all the so QCD correction, from this heavy scale down to the scale where the process occurs. Okay? So here we can compute everything in perturbation theory. So these are non-randomizable operators, but there is no problem. We can compute their anomalous dimension. So using this tool of effective theories, we can compute the evolution of. So you see, this is a coupling which is like the randomizable. There is no conceptual difference between the randomizable coupling and the coupling of this operator. They run using the randomization group equation. So we start from the initial value at the weak scale, and we go to some value at the B scale. And what happens in computing this running is that something dangerous happens. For instance, in some cases, for instance, in the case of this called gluon penguin, we can have that these four quark operators, those which were four quark operators at the W scale, so which were three-level diagrams, mix into the flavor changing neutral current operator. So I have, now for me, the W doesn't exist anymore, okay? So you have only four quark operator. I have four quark operator with, I can close the loop of this type. Here, everything occurs at low energy. Now, if this loop gives me a logarithmic sensitivity, I get a big effect. And so this is a phenomenon which that we want dilute the interesting information which was here in the coefficient of this operator with some information which is not sensitive to new physics. So if this mixing is large, it means that the observer will not be very sensitive to new physics. If this mixing is small, it's nice. And so the mixing is small in the case of the electroweak penguin, so in the case, for instance, where we have the Z, okay, because we have a power lag mechanism, so it's exactly like in the case of the box, if you do it in the case of the Z penguin, while in the case of the gluon penguin, one see that we don't have this power suppression, and so the mixing is large. So in the case of gluon penguins, unfortunately, we have really sensitivity to all the scale, from the electroweak down to the MB, and actually the contribution coming from the low energy scale is the dominant one. And so finally, having built this tool, the last thing we have to do is finally to compute the hadronic matrix element. Because now, finally, we built a theory where the only scale is MB, okay? We have integrated out all the degrees of freedom above MB. We have a series of dimension six operators, and finally, with this dimension six operator, we need to, if you want to compute the matrix element B quark going to finite state, what we need to evaluate is this matrix element. Here, again, this computation is difficult in general, okay? It involves what are called hadronic form factor, and it's essentially very hard in all cases where the finite state is a pure hadronic finite state, like B going to 5 pi, B going to kk, because we don't have a non-perturbative tool to evaluate this effect. Here, clearly, it's a non-perturbative phenomenon, while it's relatively simple in the case where we have only leptons in the final state. So, before discussing the exclusive cases, let me first mention only something about B2S gamma. Okay. In the case of B2S gamma, the evaluation of this matrix element is easy, okay, because we can do it using the 1 over B expansion. So one can show that in the limit where lambda QCD over MB is small, computing the things at the hadronic level is equivalent to computing the things at the partonic level. So this is why this calculation is very precise in the standard model. And actually, this is something which is measured very precisely by the B factor. And you see, there is a great success for the standard model. I mean, the fact that this rare process agrees well with the standard model prediction. And of course, this is a great challenge from any extension of the standard model. I mean, in several models, before this measurement was done, one would have expected a big deviation. And indeed, just to show you an example of how this can be used as an information for physics beyond the standard model, I'll show you a plot from one of the work we have done together with Sven and John in the context of supersymmetry. So I can use this comparison between the measurement of B2S gamma and the prediction of B2S gamma. I can use it to put a strong constraint in the MSSM parameter space. So this calculation, so this prediction is done, okay, assuming the standard model. Of course, if I go in supersymmetry, I will have other contribution. Okay, I have the contribution of Cergino and Squark. Okay, and even now, doing this calculation in supersymmetry in a model which I will define tomorrow, okay, which actually was already defined by Sven, which is the constraint MSSM, where actually we force somehow the coupling here to be exactly the same coupling of the standard model. So here there is VTB, and here there is VTS in analogy to the standard model. Okay, this is consistent to do it in supersymmetry in separate class of model. Even in that case, this still is, from this comparison, is a very significant constant on the model. And to show this constant, you see here this plot, which maybe is a bit complicated, but I want to illustrate it. So here, what you see on this axis is the relative reduction of the preferred area in the M0 tangent beta plane of the CMSSM. Okay, so this is what Sven showed you. I mean, you have seen this area in the, John showed you this area in the M0 tangent beta plane in the constraint MSSM. And to determine this area, we use the information between gamma, so we use the comparison between these two observables. Okay. And so here you see normalizing, okay, this point one is the present accuracy on B2S gamma. Okay. Now suppose that I could decrease the error on B2S gamma by 50%, you see that my allowed error in the M0 tangent beta plane would become 25%, so would decrease by a factor 4, which means that really B2S gamma is an extremely powerful constraint in constraining this model. You see here, in this plot, you see not only the information from B2S gamma, you see also what happens if one varies G-2. If one varies G-2, also one has a significant impact. You see MW, but see, B2S gamma together with G-2 is really one of the two crucial constant which allow to determine the parameter space of the most conservative model you can think of, which is this constraint MSSM. If you go to a more wild model, you actually kill a much larger room of parameter space. So it's a very significant information. Okay, last few minutes. Other questions? Okay, the last things I want to briefly discuss, okay, maybe eventually we finalize it tomorrow, are now other the case which are more relevant for a hadronic machine, which are exclusive the case of the type which I told you, B2 hadron plus photon or lepton finite state. Here, the difficulty is that, okay, to evaluate this matrix element, okay, the matrix element of, for instance, B and a K on B and K star using this for fermion operator. There has been a lot of progress. The only real model-independent tool that we have to evaluate this matrix element is the lattice, okay? Because there we really, on the lattice, we put this for quark operator, we put, quote unquote, the hadrons, and we measure what it is. If there is a single hadron in the finite state, the lattice is good because we don't have to deal with the rescattering effect and so on, which are not under control. At the moment, the typical error on the form factor at 30%, which is in a sense it's a pity because the calculation, theoretical calculation, is much better. Okay, but however, first of all, I think it will be reduced in the future. So probably when LSB will be ready, maybe the error will come down to 20% or even better. And also there is another tool, more theoretical, that we can construct some appropriate ratio of a process or differential distribution where we cancel the form factor. Okay? In particular, one of the very interesting cases is the Forrow-Beck relativity in B to K star, plus or minus, and another case where we really know quite well the form factor is the case of B lepton antilepton, which I discuss. Now, so the lepton Forrow-Beck relativity in B to K star, plus or minus, is defined as the symmetry, okay, of the decay distribution of mu plus mu minus in the with respect to the momentum of the B. Okay, this asymmetry is due to the interference of what I call here C10 and C9 and C7. If maybe I was a bit too fast before, what are C9 and C10? Well, C9 and C10 are the operator where I have here my leptons with a vector or an axial current. You see, the axial current can only come from the Z, okay? The gluon, the photon are Q vector current. While Q10 is the operator which is really sensitive to the Z penguin, which is the one which is really pure short distance effect. So this is why this asymmetry is interesting, because it's really a way to determine this C10. So this proportion to C10, which not only, but you see, it's an interference effect. So you get the relative phase of this Wilson coefficient. So again, you get the relative phase between two different weak amplitudes. So it's a very nice observation. Again, it's a very useful probe of non-standard scenario. And to cancel the uncertainty, you simply need to construct an asymmetry. Okay, if you look at the so this cosine theta is the angle between the positive lepton and the B momenta. And in this ratio, okay, when you construct this asymmetry, you basically cancel most of the four-factor uncertainty. So this is why it's nice when you compute it precisely. You see here the theoretical error, it's at the level of 5%. And so what one predict, okay, for this asymmetry, that, and the prediction is almost independent of the detail of the form factor, is that there is a zero in this distribution. This distribution can be measured as a function of Q squared, which is the lepton invariant mass. Okay, so we have dk, b2k star, lepton to lepton. We call Q squared the invariant mass of the two leptons. So as a function of Q squared, we measure this asymmetry. Well, there is a region here where we have non-perturbative effect because we have a b going to k star, j psi goes into lepton to lepton. So this region we don't control it very well, but this region we control it well. And here we expect a zero of the asymmetry, which this prediction is only dependent on the fact that we have C7 and C9, these two operators. We know very well the sign of these two operators, so this is a model independent prediction in the standard model, okay, so it's a very solid prediction. We also know the position of this zero quite precisely. We also know the sign of the symmetry quite precisely, and we also know that if we sum the asymmetry for B and B bar, the effect, the net effect should be zero, because this is a CP-violating quantity. Okay, so these are all very clean prediction, and you see how is the present experimental situation. You see that it's definitely not conclusive at all. So this is what we expect in the standard model. You see that there are still very large errors. It's even possible to fit everything changing the sign of C7, which was the operator which contributed to B2S gamma. And so B2S gamma, we only measure the modulus of C7. Okay, so it could possibly that maybe C7 has a different sign. So certainly here there is a lot of room for improvement, and actually it's a very clean quantity. This is one of the best ways to access this Z penguin in the standard model. And again, it's something which certainly is good for hadronic machines, because it's a relatively clean finite state. Okay, the last things before concluding, I think a decay which is definitely worth to mention, and we will come back to it in more detail tomorrow, is the decay B going to lepton antilepton, because this is really a special case among the exclusive B decays, because the theoretical error of the calculation is 1%, because here there is only the Z penguin. Okay, there is no photon penguin. One can show that the photon penguin vanished. There is no gluon penguin, and so there is no pollution from the long distance physics. The hadronic what they said is very simple, is FB is the B meson decay constant, very clean signature, and there is a very strong sensitivity to scalar current beyond the standard model. So if there is some deviation in Higgs penguin beyond the standard model, you should see it measuring precisely this decay. We'll discuss in more detail tomorrow. One can have even one order of magnitude enhancement in model with multi-Higgs, like for instance supersymmetry, where you have two Higgses. The only difficulty is that the branch ratios are very small, you see, 10 to minus 9 and 10 to minus 10. And so the exercise you have to do for tomorrow is try to understand why this decay is very interesting. And to do that, I think I suggest you, it's a very simple exercise, much simpler than the box calculation. So this, you definitely have to do it, no excuse. So compute the charged analog, which is B going to lepton neutrino, at the tree level, compute it as usual, I mean with the W, okay, and compare with the result that you obtain in the gauges limit. Okay. And even to help you the calculation, I give you the value of the two relevant hadronic matrix elements, okay, the matrix element of the axial current and the matrix element of the pseudo-scalar current. So you see, you have simply to compute these two diagrams. And then tomorrow I ask you the result, so do this calculation. So this is the B, okay. So then you simply evaluate this amplitude, then you will have this current here, and then you use this result to evaluate the matrix, the hadronic matrix element, and then you do exactly the same, but in the gauges limit of the standard model. You remember what we discussed yesterday. So where you put here only the Gostom boson, okay? So here clearly you will have the Yukawa interaction. Okay. We stop here.
Okay, so time for questions.
Yeah. So, and maybe you want to talk about it tomorrow, but can you talk about the competitiveness of LHCb versus CMS and Atlas?
Well, this is a complicated. Well. Versus CMS and Atlas? Ah, no, sorry. Well, for the time-dependent distribution, I think there is no comparison. Clearly, LHCb is much better. It's really designed for that. Also for measurement like the measurement of gamma, where you need to measure B2 decay, final state, and so on. I mean, two-body hadronic final state, there is no competition. For process like B2, B plus or minus, well, here I think there is an open competition, because this signature is relatively simple, that maybe even Atlas and CMS can identify it, although the branch ratio is awfully small. So it's tough, I think, to identify. I mean, even if you just look at the muon pairs and you put the invariant mass to be the B meson mass, the branch ratio 10 to minus 9, it's I mean, you have to fight a lot with the background to be sure that you have a B sub S. So I think here the competition is open, okay, I would say. But maybe also some experimental colleague can say more. Probably till we don't see the first data, we cannot say. But certainly here, I would say in principle, there can be competition. Yes? Last question.
How you compare, like the one in standard model it is 3.15 and
what I meant is that, okay, this is what we have in a standard model, okay, and this is what is measured. Now if you do the calculation in supersymmetry, you will not have this, okay, you will have this times a complicated function of the supersymmetric parameter space, okay, actually in the limit where all the SUSY masses goes to infinity, you basically recover this. So you can think of the BS gamma in SUSY as B2S gamma in the standard model times a complicated function of the supersymmetric parameter space, okay. This function is arbitrary, okay, this function is theoretically known, and then you can use the comparison between these two, I mean, the fact that you have measured this, to determine the allowed space for the parameter which determine this function, okay? And this is why, how you constrain the parameter space. Probably, Sven has shown this plot, Okay, sorry, just read the last. So there was this allowed area in the, it's more like this. And not tangent beta. Okay, and basically the preferred area was here, if you remember. Well, the shape of this curve in the not tangent beta plane is largely built by this experimental result. Okay. This is what I mean.
Okay, so we need to stop there, so let's thank Gino again.